all the secretaries out there who have very demanding bosses that insist on coffee just the way they like it, avoid a spanking by switching to Sparkplug Coffee. Sparkplug is always made with premium Arabica fair trade beans. They offer blends and roasts to suit any taste, including decaf and half-calf. But the best part is that Sparkplug delivers this fantastic coffee to you in Canada or the US within 1 week of custom roasting it so that it always reaches you fresh and at its peak flavor. It's so good that if you want a spanking, you're going to have to start finding something else to sabotage. You can order Sparkplug as you need it, or you can join the Autopilot Coffee Club for regular deliveries. It's completely customizable and flexible. And because you're a top 100 listener, Sparkplug is offering you 20% off your next coffee order. Just use the promo code TOP100PROJECT at checkout. So what are you waiting for? It's time to dominate your coffee routine. Plug yourself in at sparkplugcoffee.com.
Funny, when you hit yourself really hard, it doesn't really hurt that much. If you did that exact same amount of poundage to me, probably would have hurt.
Let's find out.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Top 100.
Project.
And action.
Happy day, happy night, or happy whatever to you lovely listeners, and thank you for allowing the 428th Ellis's Analysis to be part of your day, or your night, or your whatever. We review aged films, and we always do oodles of spoiling. I'm the guy who's the polar opposite of James Spader and Secretary in just about every way, but I do appreciate his intolerance for spelling mistakes, although not the punishment, Ryan Ellis. And here's the lady who would probably never kill a worm to make a kinky point to her boss, my wife, Bev.
That's me.
If you make a mistake in this episode, you're going to get such a pranging. Well, speaking of pranging, that great expression in Dr. Strangelove, this begins the month of Strange Love. Not Dr. Strangelove, that classic satire, but strange and love as two separate words. We'll tackle four flicks that look at sex, lust, love, and romance in unusual and often shocking ways. And this is a pretty interesting start to that because this is not a common, big screen, fairly mainstream movie. So the coming attraction's opinion question for Secretary. Would you rather spank people, be spanked, watch people spanking others, or would you rather just be a cutter like Maggie Gyllenhaal's character is in the early part of this film?
So I would never seek it out, but I could definitely be a spanker.
Okay.
What about you?
I guess I'd rather watch, but I'm not really even into that, which is ironic for a movie critic, movie watcher.
I don't want to watch. A voyeur, if you will.
Yeah, not really even into that. It's not really my thing. I just can't relate to these kinks specifically. Not judging, just not my thing. And also, I have done a little spanking in the past, and I wasn't really that into it. This is one of those podcasts where you don't want to get too deep in your own personal life, especially with your wife and with your husband.
Considering you are the one I would be spanking under this circumstance, if it was something that you wanted, even needed, in your sex life, I could deliver, but I could never take it. Pain is the opposite of a turn-on for me. Giving it, if somebody was enjoying it, then I think I could find a way to make that work.
Well, of course, we do have a decent sexual history, apart from each other, long ago. So,
thank God I know my parents don't love me enough to listen to my podcast.
Or me.
Yeah, it's true.
My parents.
I mean. You and I sowed our oats.
We did.
Yep, before we
Most of mine was in the span of about 2 years before I met you. I may not seem it, but I've been around a little bit. All right, the textbook example of workplace sexual harassment was screened at many festivals, then was released by Lionsgate Films 20 years ago in September and October of 2002. It more than doubled its budget worldwide, so when your movie didn't cost that much and you don't have to pay a lot for promotion, then you've made Lionsgate fairly happy. But Bev, the movie is 20 years old, so it would help if you would give us the skinny on The Secretary. The Secretary. The new title of the movie. It's just Secretary.
Maggie Gyllenhaal is Lee, a fragile young woman recovering from a mental health crisis and starting her very first job as secretary to James Spader's Edward, a strange and particular lawyer. Edward puts Lee through the ringer with increasingly humiliating requests and admonitions for small mistakes, but to his surprise, Lee likes it. She thrives under his strict control and her own obedience. A bond grows between the pair as they embrace their dominant and submissive roles. But Edward is consumed by shame, so Lee has to go to extreme measures to convince him to embrace their lifestyle together.
Or, in a nutshell, have you seen the poster? That nutshells this movie. Have you seen it?
Well, there's two posters. There's the one of her behind. She's bending over, and you can see her stocking seams.
Right. That's
what
I'm talking
about. Very sexy. But I don't think that that poster informs you what the movie is really about.
Well, that's true.
It just tells you this is a sexy movie, which
don't forget,
is.
The nutshell is supposed to miss the point of the movie, but oh, be right. relevant in some way to the movie. And also in that poster, I guess the one thing that's missing is maybe there'd be some light bruising, but I bet maybe they couldn't put that out there in the general public. That may be why that isn't there. And also, apparently, that's not Maggie Gyllenhaal posing there.
Well, that's not surprising. They would have had to just tread so lightly. They do in the film. The script is really nuanced, and the performances are really what sells that it's not abuse. Anybody who knows what this film's about and doesn't see it for themselves would be very easily compelled to think it was a movie that was condoning abuse. Like you said, if you saw bruises on the backs of her legs or something, then somebody would think it was glorifying abuse, and people have such hair triggers to judge things that they haven't actually watched. So I can see why that would be a bad idea. It'd be a hard film to market. It must have gotten by on word of mouth, because I remember hearing, but I remember I saw it because it was recommended to me over and over again.
I told you it did pretty well, considering it isn't some big blockbuster-type film, or really not even big names. James Spader had been acting for a long time and certainly was well-known, but he wasn't a star. He wasn't a headlining type of star. And Maggie Gyllenhaal wasn't brand new, but she was fairly new to movies.
This was her first starring role.
Right. The secondary nutshell, by the way, is don't knock it till you tried it. That was my original nutshell, but I was looking at the poster and thought, that is a great poster shot.
Don't knock it until you've tried knocking.
Yeah. By the way, if you do hear a fans, that is because we're using a brand new laptop. Well, it's not brand new, but it's a refurbished one that we got. And we're using that because the desktop computer Bev has tends to make a lot of noise. So hopefully this is generally quieter, but we'll see.
And if you hear some other unusual, harder-to-place noises, it's probably our little foster dog who won't leave our side, would just annoy us if she wasn't in the room with us, but also won't settle down and just stop making a racket, licking herself and walking around and sniffing things.
Appropriate for the month of Strangelove, she is licking her own crotch.
She is.
Crotch area, anyway. And now she's scratching.
There she goes.
So we'll put up with that. Okay, so the Rotten Tomatoes numbers on Secretary. 77% of critics gave this a positive review. 6.8 out of 10 was the average. On the strength of 158 reviews and 82% of audiences. So the audience is just a little bit more like the movie than the critics. It was 183rd at the 2002 U.S. box office. Chicago, the best picture winner, was number 10. Adaptation, which Maggie Gyllenhaal was also in, was number 102. And Bowling for Columbine, which we just recently covered, last month in fact, was 104th. This won the special jury prize for originality at Sundance, and Maggie Gyllenhaal got a lot of award nominations, but no Oscar nominations for anything in the movie. It would have only probably been her and maybe the script. I guess Spader might have been talked about, but no Oscar nominations of any kind. Okay, so this is going to be an unusual month, and this is an unusual film. I believe we own it, and if we do, I think it's because you must have bought it. So obviously you're a fan. I certainly respect it and like it too, but what are your thoughts on Secretary?
I adore this film. It's a beautiful love story, great writing, outstanding performances, but most of all, it really opened a window for me into a lifestyle I can't begin to relate to and never really gave all that much thought to before. There's this film, and there's also this documentary called Sick about Bob Flanagan, who's a masochist and a performance artist, and they both really radically changed the way I perceive kink, for lack of a better word. It's a film that really makes me curious and open-minded and much less judgmental. It's just such a beautiful, empathetic film.
All those points are fair. I think the biggest criticism I would have with this is what Chris and I have criticized so often in our movies for Scoring at the Movies, my other podcast. This is listed as a comedy, but did we laugh?
Oh, we laughed here and there.
Not much then.
Considering the subject matter, it's incredibly light and it has a whimsy that you would never expect.
I'm not being hard on it for that reason. I'm just saying that is a factor in what's supposed to be a comedy.
Okay, that's a marketing complaint, though, that they marketed it as a comedy. How many films listed as comedies are not that funny at all?
When we review a movie like that, you and me, or Chris and me, we better criticize that because that is part of the draw of the film. But it is a strong piece of work. Apparently, it's set in Florida, and the confirmation on that is that towards the end of the film, maybe it's earlier, but I definitely noticed it towards the end, that it says Florida on Spader's license plate. So when Edward is coming over finally to relieve Lee of her burden of staying in the office and sitting at that desk for 3 days straight. 3 days, is that a Jesus reference maybe up on the cross? Is it 3 days he's there or is it 2 days?
3 days.
I never thought of that until right now. Maybe it's a reference to him. Goddamn Jewel. You're going to get spanked.
Oh, no. We can't. She weighs
too little.
Nothing.
The film was shot in L.A., though, of course. So you've got the palm trees in Florida and we've got the palm trees in Los Angeles. The film opens with a typewriter sound effect, which is appropriate. Maybe it's an homage to All the President's Men, which has that great opening of the bang, bang. And you realize, oh, this is a super close-up on a typewriter. The pen is mightier than the sword type of aspect, or the typewriter key is mightier than the sword in that film. And then we see here, so it's one of those films where we go into the middle of the story briefly, and we come back to that scene later on, where she is dressed so well, but also in this bondage gear. So she can't really use her hands properly because they're out like a cross. I just realized that. I never thought of this Jesus stuff until right this second as I'm saying it, that she's in a, what do you even call
that? She's crucified. If it has a name, whatever it is, it's like a pole that
her
hands
are attached
to. And she's just doing her job, collecting paper from the typewriter. She has a coffee. She has something like
looking
a letter in her
it.
Teeth. And not just happy, confident.
I'm home.
Owning it. She is so sexy in that scene, just slithering around. She has so much poise. And then it hard cuts to the beginning of the film, where she's completely the opposite.
Only 6 months earlier, too.
Completely unsure of herself, very childlike, clearly no self-confidence, not even any self-identity.
Gyllenhaal has a very open face anyway, but especially in the early scenes of this film. Well, not that very opening, because that is a later on set scene. But through most of the first half or so, she plays it almost like a child as well. The one sex scene we see between her and Jeremy Davies in this movie, she clearly doesn't enjoy herself. We've seen a lot of sex scenes, actually, in movies with women don't really care at all. The look on their face is, okay, glad that's over. And this is one of those examples.
As a woman who had sex as a teenager, I can assure you, that's pretty accurate. Men that age don't know what they're doing, and especially if you're just not into somebody and you're waiting for it to click, and you've seen enough movies that you believe it should be easy, but it's not really.
And by then, she wants him to spank her. I believe that's the same scene. He doesn't really want to do it that much, so that doesn't help either. She wants him to do something that he is not into and doesn't understand either. But even if he did spank her, it maybe wouldn't be enough. She tries to spank herself. And maybe because you have your own control, it's harder to hit
the
yourself
angle
that
is
much.
Weird.
I don't feel any pain in my bum right now. It was maybe 10 minutes ago. But if you did that to me, the same amount of force, maybe I would feel a little bit of pain. So that may be part of it, too, is that she can't hit herself hard enough because it's her hitting herself.
See, it's like you can't tickle yourself. It's never going to have the same effect because it's all in your mind. I think this movie illustrates that well, too. It's more in your mind than it is on your body.
Yeah. It's not like she was raised in a terrible home from the mother's standpoint. Her dad's abusive. And she and her sister have nothing in common.
He's an alcoholic. Oh, right. No, he does abuse her mother, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's
not a good dad, so maybe that's one of the reasons why this is happening. And also, as we're learning in the last couple of years, if you just try to pay attention to what people have to say, be socially aware, you're going to realize that there aren't always reasons for why people are the way they are, whether it be mental health troubles or what have you. But she does have a bad dad, does not have a bad mom. Leslie Ann Warren has been acting for a very long time. One of the big movies she was in was Clue. She's part of that ensemble, the 1985 Clue. But she is very lovable and caring in her fairly small role. Contrast to Stephen McHattie as her dad, a Canadian, I don't know if a legend is true, but he's been in quite a few movies over the years himself. We're working for 50 years also. We've covered him three times, A History of Violence, and he's got a small role in Mother. He's great in History of Violence. He's the one that says, coffee! But they're such contrasting parents, and that maybe is why Lee is the way she is. Her mother is maybe too much in a good way, although a really wonderful woman by the looks of it, and her father is too much in a bad way. Her sister, I thought, would have a bigger role in this film, but Amy Locane, we see her early on in the wedding that she has after Lee gets out of the institution. Seems like it's, what, the same day?
They say in the voiceover, my sister's wedding was the same day I got released.
So they are so opposite, but the sister is really not in the movie that much after that opening bit of the film. Now, we do see Lee's cutting kit. She actually has two of them, I guess a travel kit as well.
Yeah, it's
and
literally.
She doesn't cut herself in that opening bit when it looks like she's about to after her dad has been abusive, I think, towards the mother.
But somebody distracts her, right? Somebody calls
she's
her
going
name
to,
or
but doesn't go through with it.
So, yeah, like you said, it's the beginning of the film. She's so childlike. When her mom picks her up from the hospital, she puts her in the back seat.
We see that scene several times. She's laying in the back seat like a little kid would.
Yeah, a grown-up would just sit in the front with her mom, but I don't know if we ever see her do that. There's all these indications, and the production design is very much indicating, not even that she's still a teenager. Her room is the room of a little girl. Mm-hmm. The walls are pink. She has a four-poster bed with the chiffon drapes, and her cutting kit, like you said, she has this special cutting kit that you can tell she takes care of, that she's curated over the years with all of her tools. She has a whetstone for sharpening her porcelain ballerina that she sharpens so she can cut herself with that. And it's covered in butterfly stickers. And they're all these relics from childhood, because this is a movie about her growing up. When she finds herself, she can finally leave childhood behind. You talk about how her mother is so sweet. She's so sweet. She's protective. Her heart is so in the right place, and she's so worried about Lee. But it is too much. Lee needs to branch out on her own. She needs to be brave and be independent. And her mom's worry is making it easier for her to just stay in that cocoon forever.
And Lee is caught cutting by her mom with a kitchen knife. She just digs too deep, and that's the problem. That's why she goes to the institution. But then when she comes back home, and after the wedding's over with and all that, she finds want ads in the trash, just happens to notice that Edward Gray, E. Edward Gray, James Spader, needs a typist.
A secretary.
But he actually says a typist. I put that in quotes. And when I do that in my notes, quotes in my notes, and that tends to mean that's literally what somebody said. Later on, of course, when things get bad, but it's good in her case because she likes this, she has to go dumpster diving for his notes.
He doesn't ask her to get in the dumpster. He just asks her to go find it from the garbage.
Okay, but she might as well have to get into the garbage. So here's the question, because when she first goes there, the place is a complete disaster. And we don't know what happened with the previous secretary who's leaving, not looking too happy about it.
She's crying.
Okay, right. So the question is, has Gray done this exact thing or similar enough to this exact thing with previous secretaries, and now he's finally found the right one who didn't even know she was into this until it started happening, meaning the BDSM and abuse?
If I were to say that there's anything in this movie that is a misstep, it is the way that Edward treats everybody. He doesn't know when and how he can express himself this way. The sign in the front, it's his name on the sign, lawyer. And then secretary wanted, and he turns the light on and off, yeah, like a vacancy in a hotel. So this man goes through secretary so fast that he had this installed in his sign. Also, later on in the film, he's burning all the relics because he's trying to quit his bad habit as he sees it. And there is a file that has Polaroids of Lee and every other secretary he's had, including the one that took off crying. So the implication being that he was really abusive. It would just be abuse if somebody's not into it. Lee's into it, but he clearly really hurt this woman.
No one else was, I guess, because no one else was there.
Then you're just a jerk. And I don't like that touch because he's not a jerk. There's all kinds of signals that imply that he actually is a really good person who really cares about Lee. There's that save the cat touch that he doesn't use kill traps when he's trying to catch mice. He uses the humane traps, and then he picks them up and he releases the rat outside. You made the joke off the top that I would never kill a worm just to get your attention, which I wouldn't. It's true. I would never. And he wouldn't kill a worm. And of course, the very end of the film, after the big romantic moment where he picks her up and takes her home and bathes her and spoils her, she's like a baby again. It's like she's born in that moment again. He takes such good care of her. I looked up a lot of what BDSM community actually feels about this film, and they said that this was actually the part that they found the most refreshing and the most accurate. The sadist, if you will, in the relationship, the dom, really cares about
the spadist.
The spadist. Oh my god, the spadist in the relationship actually,
and the magicist is the other side.
Oh my god, that's so perfect.
Just thought of it right now.
I've heard the expression many times before that a sub tops from the bottom. This sub in a relationship like this is actually the one who's in charge because everything is predicated on consent. And the consent always comes from the sub. So a dom who really cares about their partner is what the community would consider a true BDSM relationship. And they really love that part. So that's why I don't like that he's mean to his other secretaries. That something obviously went really sour in his marriage.
He avoids Trisha like he's a little kid hiding from his mom when he broke the cookie jar.
Yeah. Well, he's so afraid to confront himself. He's far more repressed than Lee is. It's illustrated that this repression has driven away his ex-wife, the long list of secretaries, of course. And even though his character arc isn't the focus of the film, it's just as deep and realized as Lee's. In fact, Lee seems to come to terms with herself with much more ease than he does. And then her role becomes one of this persistent convincer. She's the one that has to bring him around to his repressed nature. When we were watching the film, I said that the first act feels so much like Brokeback Mountain, starring the other Gyllenhaal, that you have these two people that really want something but are too ashamed of themselves and too repressed to embrace this obvious and desperate connection that they have with one another. All right, get it out of your system.
It's out. It's funny you say that because
I wish I knew how to quit singing over Bev.
I think every time Brokeback has come up, I've done that. It is great music. Actually, yeah, Jake and Maggie, who are still so young at this point, and we're in Donnie Darko together. It's one of the movies we've covered of Maggie's. We've covered at least four films of hers now. Dark Knight adaptation, Donnie Darko, and now this. Maybe there's others, but those four anyway. She and her brother will take chances and do unusual things that not a lot of other stars, or even actors, period, will take. And this is a good example of that with Maggie.
Mm-hmm.
And him, of course, playing a gay guy in Brokeback.
Early in his career, and back when I'm sure that there were plenty of agents out there that would have advised him very strongly against doing this, saying yeah. that it could ruin his career. He is a gorgeous man, and he's a talented actor with charisma to spare. He could have definitely gone on the true movie star track, like The Rock, or Clooney's probably bad, but...
He was coming off of The Day After Tomorrow, too, which I didn't like, but it was a successful big-budget film. And then the very next year, he does a movie like Brokeback. Maggie wasn't that well-known at this point, so it wasn't such a chance for her to take. It was a chance to get noticed. It's almost like Sharon Stone doing Basic Instinct, and that's a great performance, too. We're going to do that movie at some point this year. And she'd been working longer than Gyllenhaal had. But in both cases, you take on these unusual movies that have sexual dynamics in them. And if you pull it off, it can make you a legend. It did with Stone in that film. Still one of her best works ever, if not the best. This isn't quite, I wouldn't say Gyllenhaal, Maggie Gyllenhaal's best work. But it's on that list somewhere. Spader is a guy who's done a lot of unusual sex-type films, though. Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Oh, yeah.
He was still fairly new to movies at that point. Maybe not new, but he'd been in, was it Pretty in Pink? One of the John Hughes films.
Yeah,
but anyway,
him,
he was
right?
in Sex Lies, and we know what that movie's about. We thought about covering that a couple years ago, but didn't. Crash, not the Oscar goes to Crash. No, the one by Cronenberg in the mid-90s. And I think he's done other things that are about unusual sexual proclivities, but then, of course, this being at least the third. So he's got the hat trick of movies where he has some unusual kinks, and other people in the films do, too.
He's like the king of sexy menace, because when he's doing it right, he's so hot. This movie and Sex, Lies, and Videotape, chef's kiss.
Well, the scene where he spanks her, and I think it was that scene, or was it the one where he jerks off? I don't know if it's on her, but behind her. One of those two, you turned to me when it was over and said, is it just me, or was that really hot? And I said, no, that was hot. I think it's
oh,
the spanking.
Oh, the spanking scene is hot. The jerking off scene is not as hot.
But then that's when she goes in the bathroom and she jerks herself off.
Oh, yeah, she's completely turned on by it, but I feel like a man jerking off is just not a... sexy sight. It's really all wrapped up in her reaction. She is so turned on by this that the audience gets turned on. And in the jerking off scene, she seems more confused. Like, she just doesn't know what's going to happen. He's taking it this...
He keeps saying, I'm not going to fuck you.
Yeah.
He says it more than once. But she has to pull her pants down.
She just doesn't know what's going to happen, so she's apprehensive. And then he jerks off. If that was me in that situation, I would be very upset. I would consider it a kind of sexual assault. But it is exactly what she wanted. And then she goes to the bathroom and masturbates, and his paralegal hears her. Paralegal, I'm not sure what the situation was there. I thought at the beginning of the film that maybe the paralegal was a pro, like a dominatrix or something that he saw, because she had this real knowing way about her. But she also just seems to show up and work. Why would she be in the bathroom that day if that was her job and that's what she did for him?
That actress is Lily Knight, and her credit is paralegal. Doesn't even have a name. Well, one thing that's very key to this movie, too, as far as empathy goes, is that Edward notices the bandages on Lee's legs early on, and he almost catches her cutting at her desk. And he seems to know what this is all about. I wouldn't have known. I don't think even now, after seeing a movie like this, I would pick up on what I'm looking at, unless it was very obvious. If she was about to do it, maybe it was knife or the object at the thigh, then okay, fine, maybe I'd pick up then. But he seems to intuit what's going on. And because we never really find out what he's thinking through the entire movie, she has a brief voiceover when she walks home alone. I feel like it's the only, or one of the only times there's a voiceover in the whole film. And I think that's when she finally starts feeling free, because he makes her, well, tells her she shouldn't be getting rides from her mommy anymore.
It's a turning point in the movie. Another thing that I read when I was looking up how the community feels about this is they said doms will tell their subs to do things that they'll like doing. When he restricts the food she's eating, he doesn't tell her to starve herself. He's like, you only eat a little bit of peas, no vegetables for you, a little bit of potatoes, but you could eat all the ice cream you want. Like, it's a treat. He's being nice to her. And when he tells her to take a walk home, he's doing something nice for her because...
He's right.
He's right, but he says, you're never going to cut yourself again. So he gives her this order, depriving herself of something that she uses to manage her emotions. It's a total crutch. It's a really harmful behavior and a sign of worse mental illness. So he says, okay, you're never going to do this again. You're never going to fall back on this crutch when you're feeling overwhelmed by your feelings. And then he orders her to take the rest of the day off and to walk home, to do something that he knows she's going to enjoy, that's going to give her space and time to think about what he said and how she's going to cope with this new reality, and also to get her away from her mother and do something that's independent. He knows what's good for her in that moment, and she needs the permission from him to look after herself. And that's part of the dynamic. It's part of, I guess, the mental thing that's happening with her, this need that she has. For some people, it's an elective kink. It's something that you'll enjoy. And then there are people who need it, who cannot be a happy person without either giving or receiving pain from somebody that they can trust. That's something that's really clear in that documentary I mentioned earlier, Sick. He was somebody who needed it, no question about it.
Well, he sees her on a date with Peter at the laundromat, and the red pens he'd thrown out earlier, we don't know at that point what they mean, but then, of course, he brings them back, and that's a big factor in his whole game. But I wonder if jealousy equals the punishment, because I don't think he starts spanking her until after he's seen her on a date with Peter.
So the first time you see the movie, you could very easily interpret it that way. Even though I've seen this movie at least 4 or 5 times, a person like you and I would totally interpret it that way. But it's actually a seduction. When he pulls those pens out, he knows it's what's going to get her off. He's saying, don't be with that guy. Be with me, because he's already seen in her what he knows to be true. He's trying to resist it just because he feels like he's sick and he feels ashamed of himself. But when he catches on that he might lose her to somebody else, he starts to actively seduce her. Okay, with the red pants.
So I guess we talked about this at the beginning. Does this film age badly? She likes what he does to her, as we've made very clear. A lot of people might think this is still harassment. We hear so many people, especially on social media, that have no tolerance for anything, especially if it's a word you've said, which is obviously different than actually hitting somebody or demeaning them. What could be viewed as demeaning anyway. So do you think this movie ages badly?
If the movie was being made today, they would have to find some other way to approach the power dynamic. It was hard for me back then. It's her first job. She really wants to succeed. He has a tremendous amount of power over her. So it is uncomfortable and weird. It was the premise of the short story that it's based on. And I think for a lot of people, period, this can be a fantasy. 20 years ago, certainly wasn't universally accepted as something that was really problematic. But if you were going to try and do something similar, you would really have to find another way to put them together, kind of like they do in 50 Shades of Grey, which, please, I am not advocating for 50 Shades of Grey as a representation for BDSM. The BDSM community, as far as I can tell, universally hates 50 Shades of Grey. But a lot of them do have a problem with Secretary, and it's wrapped up in what you're saying. So they like the fact that he's depicted as genuinely caring about her, the things like I just mentioned, that he kind of orders her to do nice things for herself, his own insecurity and his shame. Another touch they said was really realistic was that she would do these mischievous things to instigate discipline. They would talk about how her making intentional spelling mistakes and, of course, notoriously putting a worm in a letter for him. That is consent, but then that's the sticking point. Truly, in the BDSM community, there's tons of communication and there is expressed verbal consent. There are safe words. There are all kinds of ways that they behave that isn't depicted in this movie. I think the director probably knew that and decided instead to show cinematic consent. It must be near the middle of the film where he spanks her for the first time. At some point, he's overwhelmed and he falls on the desk and he puts his hand on the desk and she touches his hand with her pinky. She's communicating everything you need to know about she feels about the situation. And then it's not this situation where it's like, oh, she's too scared to leave, which is something you could easily assume about this character in this situation. No, she doesn't want to leave. She doesn't want to go anywhere. She is blossoming in this moment and she wants him to know. And that's how she communicates it. It's just like that first love scene in Brokeback Mountain. They stand to lose so much, and it's really messy, and it's fast, and it's aggressive. And
the kiss is extremely aggressive. There's a tale about that movie about how I think it was Ledger broke Gyllenhaal's nose in one of the kissing scenes.
Yeah.
And it might have been the first kissing scene, or it might have been the one where they reunite.
I think it's where they reunite.
But both of them are extremely aggressive, exactly.
Yes, yeah. But it's not a true verbal expression of consent, which is the standard that we're being taught is necessary in any relationship, but especially a relationship like this. So, yeah, it's a gray area. I think in most ways, though.
A gray area.
Yeah, it is a gray area. Isn't that funny? We talked about this, that his last name is Gray, and that has to be an inspiration for the character of Christian Gray, who's also not her boss, but a hot billionaire.
Dakota Johnson has been good in lots of movies. Chris and I liked her a lot when we covered The Peanut Butter Falcon last year. She's so sweet in that movie, and of course, she's very pretty. But even in a sexual movie like 50 Shades of Gray, two hot people, him probably even more so than her, he's a gorgeous man. Those movies are not a turn on to me at all. But her and The Lost Daughter, directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal, which is going to get Olivia Colman some Oscar notice, at least a nomination this year.
Got to.
Gyllenhaal might get nominated for Best Director even. I think she's been nominated for other awards for that. But Dakota Johnson's in that film. The first time we see her, I didn't know who it was. And I thought, who is that? Because her backside, her ass is incredible. I don't think I really knew that. Well, I guess 50 Shades shows her ass. But the hair, probably a wig she has in that movie. She is really pretty in that movie. And a good performance, too. But I think she's been better, Dakota Johnson, in other films. And Gyllenhaal directed her in one of the best things she's ever done now, The Lost Daughter.
I feel like she's just a sexy woman. She just has...
I don't think in the 50 Shades movie she is, though.
And No.
She's not really supposed to be.
You know, I was thinking of A Bigger Splash. That's a movie I always think of when I think of sexy Dakota Johnson. She just has this feline way about her. But I would say that about Maggie Gyllenhaal, too. Not in every movie she's in. But she's not a woman that I would ever consider Hollywood pretty.
She's not.
She's not a slouch. She's not an uggo.
Pretty is the key phrase there.
But she has this sex appeal. She's confident. She owns her body. You just believe it. You believe that Bruce Wayne would be crazy about her in The Dark Knight.
A lot of people could not pull
off. A movie
off.
Where she plays against Heath Ledger. Another
right.
Brokeback Connection. True. The Gyllenhaals and Heath Ledger.
You want to know how I got these scars? A lot of people could not do the two different characters she plays in this movie. The early on little girl type character who's so interior and ruined and cutting herself. And then the more sexually realized and grown up person that she is. I think a lot of people that might have taken this role wouldn't have achieved it quite the same way she did. It helps in some ways that it's a lesser known actress doing a thing like this, actually. Because if it was Demi Moore, although she's too old for it, I guess. But something like that, yeah. Someone like that. Drew Barrymore, maybe. And Drew Barrymore did a lot of sexual roles in the mid-90s. Maybe there's the baggage of them being a star, and it's hard to believe them playing the two different characters.
I watched this interview with Maggie Gyllenhaal where she talked about how bad she wanted to do this movie. She was only 21 years old. She had been in smaller parts. She'd been in Donnie Darko. And she loved the film. She auditioned for it. They thought she was amazing. She had this great connection with the director, Steven Shainberg.
We don't say his name until now.
Yeah. But. She had this great connection with him. They totally understood the character. And she said they loved her. And they were like, okay. So first we're going to offer it to a bunch of movie stars. And if they all turn us down, then the part is yours. And that's exactly what happened.
The studio probably made them do that.
Of course, you're going to want Drew Barrymore to do this movie just because it's going to get seen a lot more.
Drew Barrymore's in Donnie Darko and also was a producer on that.
That's right.
Year before this movie.
Donnie Darko, notwithstanding, she's not usually one to do very edgy, gutsy films.
I just pulled her name out of my ass, but I'm getting lucky in this podcast today with connections and things I didn't anticipate, like the Jesus thing early on, or the Magicist and Spadist thing. So Shainberg, the director, has only made a few other movies, like you said, Fur, which is the Dion Arbus. That's how you're supposed to say her name, apparently, not Dion Arbus, but most people say Dion Arbus. And he also did a horror flick called Rupture, but the movie that stands out the most in his resume is probably still Secretary. The writer was Erin Cressida Wilson. This was her debut. She also wrote that Fur movie. Also Chloe for Adam McGoyan, which is a sexual movie as well.
Oh, yeah.
With another young star who's got some guts sometimes, and that would be... I'm forgetting
Amanda
her name.
Seyfried.
That's her name. And Julianne Moore.
Oh, who's definitely gutsy.
Mm-hmm. And then also Cressida Wilson wrote The Girl on the Train a few years ago, so she's got a pretty good resume. And she based it on a short story by Mary Gateskill. Producers were Shainberg himself, Andrew Feierberg, I assume, or Feierberg, F-I-E-R-berg, who produced Fur, and Amy Hobby is another producer who did a lot with Andrew Fear or Feierberg. And by the way, the brother of Andrew, Stephen Fear or Feierberg, I don't know the pronunciation, he was a cinematographer. He also shot A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 many years before this, and Love and Other Drugs, which you didn't like, but that's a very sexually open movie too, with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes, terrible movie. I love Jake Gyllenhaal. I have a perverted crush on him, and you see him more naked in that movie than anything else. That's him at his peak. His body is insane, and I still hate that movie with a passion.
All right, so back to Secretary specifically. So when Gray withdraws, he throws those red pens. She can entice him. We talked about how she tries to spank herself. Sex with Peter just doesn't cut it at all. In fact, she makes him fuck with his clothes on, or, well, more importantly, her clothes on. Then the worm thing comes out. The jerk-off thing happens. She diddles herself in the bathroom. But he fires her because it's almost like protecting himself by doing it. She could probably have sued him for...
It is textbook sexual harassment.
Right. And then she acts to her family like she's going to work, but doesn't actually go to work. She pretends like she's doing that for a while. Peter proposes and she accepts because I think the movie even says she has nothing else to do. How many women over the years, especially long before this movie, maybe the 50s, accepted a proposal of marriage for that reason? Might as well.
And the movie is smart that they make Peter seem, at the beginning of the film, like he's her perfect match. You know, they're both awkward and kind of adorkable. They went to high school together. She likes him. Mm. She thinks he's a nice guy, and he is the quintessential nice guy. And he is crazy about her. And there are definitely 100 movies where he would win her in the end. And you feel bad for him. He doesn't deserve that. Mm. It almost reminds me, if I may bring up Brokeback Mountain again, but all the women in Brokeback Mountain whose lives are also ruined because society won't allow Ennis and Jack to be themselves. And because society won't allow Lee and Edward to be themselves,
other people get hurt.
Other people get hurt. And she leads this guy on, but at least she has the wherewithal to call off the wedding before it's too late.
Jack fucking Twist. Well, it's really important that probably this is in here because we have to not feel too bad for Peter. He did get used, but then he shows up to the office when she's been sitting in that chair for at least a day at that point, maybe longer, and he muscles her away. She will not leave. Palms down on the desk, sitting there in her wedding dress. I knew that she was wearing a wedding dress, but forgot why, and thought, why would she have been marrying Edward, but then be forced to do that? But all right, she's marrying somebody else. That wasn't the wedding day. It wasn't like the graduate. It was a fitting she was running away from. But he comes and he, I wouldn't say abuses her, but he makes her get away from the chair and she does not want to. She says no. Oh, there you go. In that exact same office, they have the side of the desk now because she's sitting in Edward's spot. Over and over again, she says, no, I don't want you to do this to me. But she never had said that to what we would think of as actual abuse when Edward was doing what he was doing to her.
Yeah, at this point in the film, she's so actualized. In the beginning, she's meek. She just lets everybody carry her along. And at this point, you see her tell off a telemarketer, stand up to her parents, and finally stand up to Peter, who probably just really thinks he's doing the right thing.
At that point, it's still his fiance. She left the engagement ring behind at his place, but that's his fiance.
I do believe Peter's going to meet another girl and fall in love and have a really happy life. Make the right woman really happy because he is the nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in that moment, he comes on too strong, that's for sure. But never so much that you're like, that's right, you gotta dump that jerk. It's ambiguous.
No,
there's
but
nothing that obviously wrong with him.
I think the scene's in there, though, so that there's a little bit more sympathy towards her for ditching the way she does. Because we know why. We are in her head more than anyone else in this movie by a country mile. We're not really in anybody else's head at all, actually, especially those two guys. But there has to be something that makes us not like Peter as much as we maybe would or feel as much sympathy. And him doing that to her in the office when she's saying no is probably the answer for that.
And he comes on too strong and his parents are definitely weird and pushy. But it also illustrates how resolute Lee is in that moment because she's getting pressure from absolutely everybody. Her parents, the press.
There's a big crowd outside.
There's a big crowd. She's being humiliated and she's having people reprimand her. But not the right people. She cares when it's Edward reprimanding her. And then her father says the sweetest thing. I can't remember what it is, but it's this lovely moment when she's already been there for days and she's put up with everybody trying to talk her out of it. And then he says something like, if it brings me happiness, it's none of your business.
She says, thanks, Daddy.
I believe that. Another nuanced relationship with somebody who we already said is a bad parent, an abuser, a drunk, somebody who's been the cause of her stress over the years, but still understands her and sees her.
Comes through when she needs him the most. Or, well, he probably failed her lots of times, but at this point, he's coming through for her.
And even her mom is trying to do the right thing. She brings her a Tupperware with just 4 peas. It's so cute. She just wants to make her happy so bad.
You mentioned the erotic bath, and it is pretty erotic, even though it's also a sympathetic type of thing, when Edward finally lets her leave the desk and takes her, I guess, back to his place. And she, at that point, Maggie Gyllenhaal, does full frontal. When he puts her in the bath, we don't see any boob action until we sort of do a little bit. But then we just see full frontal. And that's interesting they do it that way. But you mentioned her being childlike, baby-like. Well, if you're going to bathe a child, you wouldn't think twice about it. People don't hide a baby's privates from strangers or from their family if they're going to bathe them in the tub or, I guess, the kitchen sink. You don't think twice about that. It's interesting. We said she grows up in this movie in about 6 months, but in that moment, at the end of the film, or nearly the end of the film, she has regressed, but in a good way this time, because she needs the tenderness that she's getting from him.
You and I talk all the time about how the best films use nudity not to titillate, but to express vulnerability. Sexiest moments in this movie, everybody's fully dressed. No sex is taking place. The biggest turn on this movie is not where the technical sex happens. We're seeing Lee's total openness. That's what's expressed by her nudity in that scene, is this total trust and openness and their relationship reaching this next level.
Now, they do get married and they still have BDSM sex because she is tied to a tree while he's fucking her ferociously, and she's loving it and he's loving it. That leads me to what happens next, though. I think what happens next, this is more for fun, maybe not true, but Edward grows tired of having to be the aggressive alpha. He did try to stop. He said, I can't do this anymore.
Because of shame.
And he wants a normal sex life, so Lee bails and finds somebody even stranger than him. And again, not judging by saying strange, but to the average person, what they do is strange. This is why this movie's called, or in the month of, I should say, Strange Love. Okay, we talked about Maggie Gyllenhaal's credits already. We've covered those four films, Donnie Darko, Adaptation, The Dark Knight. And if you haven't seen The Lost Daughter, it's on Netflix, folks. Take a look. It's a pretty solid film. Olivia Colman is outstanding, and so is Dakota Johnson. She's pretty good, too.
I think anybody who's a parent is probably going to get a lot out of that movie.
James Spader. We've never covered him before.
Oh, wow.
He's made so many movies. We never covered one of them. We talked about the sex flicks he's made. The last movie he's made of any kind, though, was when he was the voice of Ultron in Avengers Age of Ultron. So it's been 6 or 7 years.
What's his TV show? Blacklist?
He's on TV, right? He's been on TV quite a bit the last several years. Jeremy Davies, who does play Peter, third build, I believe. Saving Private Ryan, we've covered him in that. And, of course, he's Daniel Faraday on Lost. And I think the same year as this, had a quirky, unusual role, which is fitting for him. He's almost always unusual and quirky in Solaris with George Clooney. And then Shane Berg, the director, has a cameo as a therapist on tape, so a voiceover role. And the writer, Erin Cressida Wilson, is in the waiting room at one point, so she has a cameo very briefly. I talked about the cinematographer already. The editor, Pam Wise, cut Transamerica, a movie that probably would not be made the same way now because you've got a woman playing a transgender man. And also lots of documentary.
She's a trans woman. She plays a trans woman.
Okay, you know what I'm saying, though.
Yes, yeah.
And then a lot of documentaries for Pam Wise and her resume. And the composer, Angelo Badalamenti. All those David Lynch projects. We'll be covering another David Lynch movie in a couple weeks. And Christmas Vacation. I always love that stands out in his resume. So what do you think of the look, the cutting, and the music by Angelo Badalamenti?
I think considering it's an indie film, it is really artful and beautiful.
A small budget, too.
I always have to talk about the production design.
His office is awesome.
Everything about the production design of this film is the complete opposite of what we've been trained to expect from any portrayal of BDSM. We've all seen the whips and the chains and the leather and the dark basements and everything is black. Here we have this bubblegum, colorful movie. His office is so organic and warm, and it's the exact opposite of where you expect these kinds of things to take place. This was very intentional, again, because realistically, that's not what BDSM looks like.
The look, by the way, no problem with the cinematography, but the print on Stars, which is how we saw it, even though we do own the DVD, but I just assumed that streaming would be fine. It was awful. Maybe that's the way the movie would look on any type of service.
The DVD is not an amazing print either.
Okay, there you go. All right, well then, that's the first movie in the month of Strange Love, Secretary by Steven Sheinberg. We didn't say his name as much as we probably should have because he's quite an auteur in this movie. I thought he wrote it as well, or at least was a co-writer, but it does just
He has a story credit.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. For your last thoughts on a movie you say you love, Secretary.
It's settled. Secretary is a classic.
Okay. 20 years is long enough to make that judgment, I guess.
And let me recommend once again to fans of this film the 1997 documentary Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Supermasochist. That really does a very deep dive into the mindset and the culture of sadomasochism. Those two movies together really opened my mind in a wonderful way. Not to say I'm a member of the lifestyle, just in the sense that it changed my attitude about how I had been trained to be judgy about these kinds of things.
I try not to judge because each to your own. That's one thing that's frustrating about people on social media or just in life, acting so outraged about everything they ever hear that isn't what they're into.
And righteousness.
We don't know the whole fucking story, even if it sounds terrible. And this is a good example of this. If this was a real story, And then she just told the story. There'd be so many people would say, how could you have taken that? He was abusing you. Well, we just talked about this for 45 minutes or so. In her case, the way she felt, no, he fucking wasn't. So stop judging everything, people that know everything about everything. Anyway, my last thoughts. I wish it was funnier because it is supposed to be a comedy, but it is quirky and cute and charming at times. And definitely very emotional. I didn't get weepy, but you care. These two unusual people found the right people. They're not going to bail. My what happens next was just a joke. But it does make you uncomfortable. It's supposed to. That's the point. And I respect what they're doing here. Major credit to Maggie Gyllenhaal and even James Spader, but he'd been down this road before for taking on this unusual and, again, strange subject matter. Strange to the average person. Maybe not so strange. There's probably millions of people that do this. In 7 days, it'll be Valentine's Day, my 48th birthday. Not that I really care that much, but it is. And we'll continue the month of Strangelove as we dig into Sarah Polley's sensitive look at Alzheimer's. So this isn't about lust, obviously, this time. This is about love and new love for older people. So her sensitive look at Alzheimer's in Away From Her. The coming attractions trivia question for Away From Her. It will be the third time we've covered a movie starring both Julie Christie and Michael Murphy. What are the other two?
So for the answer to that question, please check out next week's podcast about Away From Her. And for more from us, you can visit our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to favorite or subscribe to us wherever you listen. All of our episodes are available for free for you to binge. And that includes hundreds of episodes. What,
428 now.
428 episodes. And that includes all 123 movies that made the AFI's 98 and or 07 list of the best American films ever made. While you're there, you could leave us a rating and a review. We're both on Twitter. I'm at Bev Ellis Ellis, and Ryan is at MovieFiend51. You can also reach us by email, top100projectpodcast@gmail.com. And to enjoy freshly roasted premium coffee delivered straight to you in Canada or the US, please go to sparkplugcoffee.com and use the promo code TOP100PROJECT. That's all one word, TOP100PROJECT. It's not case sensitive, and that will get you a 20% discount.
Take Leah coffee. She could use it. She's been sitting at that desk for 3 days. Okay, I'm convinced. From now on, I'm going to be a spanker.
All right, well, good luck finding someone to spank.
Fair enough.
And cut.